The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Hi, this is Kevin McCullough. Thanks for listening to the Christian Outlook podcast, where we cover today's issues from a perspective that honors your Christian faith. Our podcast is brought to you through a partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. Here's another piece I trust you'll enjoy.
You may have heard about the Equality Act, and of course, it sounds reasonable, the Equality Act. I mean, who doesn't love equality? But what is the Equality Act? And how does something that sounds so fair can be damaging to religious institutions like Christian universities? Stephen Mansfield is back with us. Stephen is a regular guest on our show, New York Times bestselling author of Lincoln's Battle with God, The Faith of Barack Obama, Pope Benedict XVI, Choosing Donald Trump, and Never Give In, the extraordinary character of Winston Churchill. Stephen posts regularly at his blog, here today to talk to us about the meaning of the Equity Act. Hey, Stephen, thanks for coming along.
Hey, it's great to be with you. Thank you.
If you'd like to watch the show, you can log on to Facebook right now, The Ride Home with John and Kathy, or 101.5 Word FM. We've got Stephen live from his office in Washington, D.C. Okay, so let's talk about language. So language is important, right? It's important to all of us. And labeling is, you know, the way that we come to, you know, interact and understand the world around us. So when this thing is labeled the Equality Act, I mean, I'd be hard pressed to, you know, find someone on the street who thought that equality would be a bad thing.
Well, and that's the problem with language, and that's the problem with the naming of bills in D.C.
Right.
The fact of the matter is that this bill will promote a great deal of inequality, and in its attempt to maybe right some wrongs, it leans towards a kind of a bigotry against traditional Christians, traditional religion, traditional values, you might call it, in this country. Let me just set it up in the simple form.
Okay.
This bill basically edits the 1964 Civil Rights Act, which all of us think about in terms of gaining African-American rights. But now it inserts sexual orientation and gender identity into that bill. Well, let's think for a moment about what I've just said. Gender identity, that means whatever person chooses to be in gender, whether they are that biologically or not, that the law protects them in that choice. You can understand right from the beginning, after the very first question, why this is going to cause tremendous upheaval in our society. So just by understanding that these two terms are being put into this 1964 Civil Rights Act, you see the chaos that we're about to be thrust into should this thing pass.
I see. Okay, so then, Stephen, let's talk about the positive aspects of it, right? I mean, there are some things you think, well, equity is a good thing. So there has to be something, even as conservatives, that we look at the bill and shake our head and go, yeah, that makes sense.
Oh, we don't want to see gay, lesbian, trans, queer, any group like that harmed physically. We don't want to see them disparaged under the law. We want them to have equal access to services for the most part. Again, that doesn't mean that we believe that every individual should have to serve them in exactly the way they might want, but that they shouldn't be discriminated against. They shouldn't be harmed. There should be equal justice under the law. All of those traditional American values that we hold to. So there are some good things in this bill, and there are also some attempted reaffirmations of religious rights, that religious people can prefer their own type in their hiring in a religious institution or in a church. That's said lightly in the bill. So yes, there are some good things here. And by the way, the bill includes discrimination, and it's anti-discrimination regarding age. It's anti-discrimination regarding religion. There are other things protected in the bill, and not just gender orientation and or gender identity and sexual orientation. So yes, you're absolutely right. We should affirm the good, and there is good in this bill.
Very good.
Okay, well, let's go back maybe in a legal sense and look at the 64 Civil Rights Act. I mean, in 1964, I don't think that there was even a concept that we would be talking about gender identity and sexual preference.
No,
so
you're absolutely right.
So going back and reading those freedoms into it, right? I mean, is that a corruption of the original intent?
Well, I'll tell you what, I live in a largely African-American world, and I do so by choice. I attend an African-American church. I have about six or seven African-Americans in my family, et cetera, et cetera. And they will tell you that they feel like it's unjust to insert into the 1964 Civil Rights Bill matters of just choice, matters of I just choose to identify as female, for example. When they don't have a choice about how they look, and 1960, and they love how they look, obviously. I'm just saying that that's not a matter of choice for them. That's a matter of birth, and therefore there shouldn't be any discrimination about it. So yes, it's controversial from the start to insert gender identity, which is a choice that an individual makes, not anything they're born with, into a bill that was designed to guarantee fundamental rights for people with a certain color skin.
Fundamental rights. So then the big concern a lot of conservative Christians, of course, is how this protection or the equality of it looks at as far as people's employment, especially in Christian institutions, whether it's universities or churches. Talk to us about those.
Well, it's I've just been with, for example, some university Christian university presidents, and they are very concerned because the act, obviously, a Christian university would not hire a gay or trans professor, for example. I'm talking about a traditional Christian university now, a biblically based traditional Christian, what we might call Orthodox Christian university. They wouldn't hire a gay or trans or lesbian, if they knew it, the faculty member. That's not bigotry. That's simply them leaning to their own kind, people of their own faith, people of their own faith practices within their institution. Well, the possibility exists, according to this Equality Act, that lending practices could be cut off for them, that banks might not loan to them, Pell grants could be denied for them. I was talking to a university professor just yesterday who said that approximately a third of their university income comes from Pell grants, which could be cut off if the university takes a stand in hiring professors based on their traditional faith, as opposed to this Equality Act. So you see what you're dealing with. The issue is not so much that a local church is going to be forced to hire a gay pastor or forced to hire a gay secretary or youth pastor. That's not primarily the issue. But when it comes to universities, when it comes to lending practices, when it comes to your business, can you choose not to serve people of a certain kind? And obviously, I'm referring to the famous bakery situation where a Christian baker did not want to do a cake for a gay wedding. That situation will be repeated over and over and over in our society if this passes.
New York Times bestselling author Stephen Mansfield with us. He's the author of several books, a whole bunch actually, including The Faith of Barack Obama, Choosing Donald Trump, and Never Give In, The Extraordinary Character of Winston Churchill. So it makes me think of the Hobby Lobby ruling, Stephen. And, you know, as I think back, I don't know how many years ago that was, 4 years ago or 5 years ago or something like that. But, you know, basically in my head, and I could be wrong about this, but in my memory, the essence of the ruling was that the court was affirming the fact that a private company can have an ethic. You know, they can have a standard that they hold to. And so therefore they can act in ways, you know, to their employees, you know, according to what their ethic is. So if this were to pass, it would go against that ruling. There would be, you know, there would be two different things, two different standards, I would say, operating.
And that's exactly what's in contest here in this bill. In fact, this act literally says that the freedom of the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, right, which limited what Congress could do in intruding in religion, cannot be used to make a case against this act. Should the Equality Act pass, it says within the bill that the Religious Freedom Restoration Act cannot be used to mitigate against the provision of the bills. Yes, that's almost the exact language.
Wow.
And so, and by the way, I want to say quickly, I'm not a lawyer. I just study these things as an academic. I want to make sure that people know I'm not giving legal advice here. So all that to say, yes, it's dangerous in that sense that suddenly it's restricting some of the previous walls and hedges and boundaries of Congress's intrusion into religious life in America.
So the Equality Act passed recently in the House. There's conversation about it on the Hill today. Perhaps you're saying it may not pass, but we're still going to get fragments of this in one form or another. Yes?
What's very likely is that the Senate will negotiate, will compromise on language. There'll be negotiations. The thing will be modified. It'll be sent back to the House. It's questionable as to whether it's even going to pass, but it's not going to pass in its present form. So it'll be a little better than maybe what I'm saying right now. But I just today, in preparation for this interview, read the entire text of the act. And as it sits right now today, what I'm saying is what it will be. Now, hopefully there'll be modifications. And hopefully, by the way, it won't pass. Let me just say quickly that absolutely we believe in protecting the fundamental rights of gay, lesbian, trans people. The bill doesn't have to go this far. So did Nancy Pelosi and those who joined her in proposing this and putting it before the House, were they being extreme as a negotiating tactic? Possibly. But this is, no question about it, an extreme bill. And people of faith don't need to be afraid, but they do need to be urging their congressmen and senators to modify this thing, if not just vote it down.
Right.
It's an awkward position, isn't it? I mean, it's hard to be, I want to follow Jesus in a way that's honest and that's all encompassing in life. At the same time, when you come up against a culture that is preaching one thing and the gospel of Jesus is preaching another thing, it's difficult to stand in that space in a way that is intelligent and kind and understanding, while at the same time, I feel awkward even talking about this because it's a difficult thing to think about, let alone, you know, act on.
Well, and I'm glad that you feel that way, because that means you're thinking. It means you've got a conscience. It means you care about people. You know, I am as much a feminist as scripture will allow me to be. So when I take a pro-life stand, when my friends on the other side of the aisle, so to speak, accuse me of being anti-woman because I'm pro-life, accuse me, you see, I have the same response you have on this matter.
Yeah.
Hey, I consider myself an advocate for women. I've got a 30-year-old daughter. I want her to be the Pope, the King, the General, the CEO, and the President all wrapped in one.
Right.
I couldn't be more pro-woman. However, suddenly I get accused of those things. So you're absolutely right. We're not bigots. We're not haters. But anytime you affirm religious truth, it comes with what I sometimes call religious negatives. If I'm pro this, I'm opposed to that. If 2 + 2 = 4, it doesn't equal anything else. And so our faith comes with things that we reject. It comes with things, our ethical system comes with negatives, things that we don't want to be part of, things that we don't want to affirm. That's just what religion does in the world. And if all discernment, discrimination, moral choices are banned in certain situations, then that law is inherently anti-religion. And that's what we're dealing with now. It's a tough issue. Not everybody on the other side from, for example, me on this issue is necessarily evil, but they may not understand the implications of what they're doing.
Right. But even though we are having this conversation, Stephen, right, here we are on Christian radio. If you're on the radio dial and you're just pushing, you know, the buttons up and down in your car, to hear this conversation for some people is hate-filled bigotry. It's inflammatory.
Right. And they wouldn't know that the voice of Stephen Mansfield on this radio program has gay friends. My wife works in the music industry. I've attended gay weddings. I've had gays to dinner in my home. I'm not anti-gay in the sense of loving them, wanting them to be cared for, wanting them to have equal justice under the law, et cetera. I am opposed not to them, but to laws that would require me to hire them in my institution of faith or require me to prefer them. And let's keep in mind here that this Equality Act that we're talking about actually make some preferences that are in fact bigotry. It actually exalts gender identity over biological sex. So that if you have a 16-year-old daughter and she's biologically female, someone who identifies as female but actually has male parts, as you've been reading in the press, is actually preferred in this law, right, is actually preferred in female sports, is actually preferred in Title IX, I know, et cetera. But this is where we're going to run into tremendous problems. Let me just add quickly, by the way, that this act actually intrudes in parenting. if a 16 in one state in a 16 if a 16 year old a 16 year old child did receive counsel from a counseling firm that they ought to undergo a transgender kind of process, and the judge ruled that the parents' opposition was not to be considered, that a licensed counselor had given counsel to this child that they should undergo a transgender process, and the judge sided with the counsel and the child and negated the parents' counsel. Well, now this is the state coming right into the family. So I'm not a crazed hard right winger. Sure. I'm not angry. My hair is not on fire. And I don't mind saying to everyone, I love my gay friends. But when you intrude in the family and parental decision-making, when you put gender decisions on minors, when you intrude into religious preferences and processes, well, now, of course, you're going to incite a lot of people. And that's what we're talking about. I'm into
that. Stephen Mansfield with us, author, speaker, coach. Find Stephen online, StephenMansfield.tv, StephenMansfield.tv. We were talking about the Equality Act, but Stephen, you know, I love it because you've got to grab any ray of sunshine that you can in this very weird year we've just been through. And so you just posted today, you're talking about seeing the end of COVID and post-pandemic good news is ahead, isn't it?
It absolutely is ahead. And this is something I really want to celebrate. The economic factors for most Americans and for our economy as a whole are really solid. Now, I don't want to pause and say, I realize some people have lost their jobs, some people are hurting, sure, desperate for these checks coming from the government soon. I am not putting that down. I've had friends die. I have friends in tough economic circumstances. But the fact is, let me just drop back and give a quick historical analogy, comparison. During the Great Depression, 10,000 Americans became millionaires for the first time. So even during difficult circumstances, there can be tremendous economic advance. And I won't recite all the stats, but Americans have paid off massive amounts of credit card debt during COVID. Mm-hmm. Their homes have increased dramatically because what's going on in real estate markets, on average now, increased dramatically in value. Overall, the American economy is really churning. It's like people chomping at the bit just behind a gate, waiting for that gate to open. So one of the senior economists with the Washington Post said that we are looking at a tremendous opportunity for our economy to roar. He actually used that word, a non-economic term, to roar on the other side of COVID really getting tamed. Mm.
Okay, so, you know, we were talking off air about it's just a beautiful day here in Pittsburgh. We're so excited. I think we got to, would we get to 66 degrees today?
Somewhere in that ballpark.
That's probably the warmest we've been in about, seems like 5 years. Actually, it was just a long winter. But there's this sense of optimism, Stephen, about just, you know, the fact that, you know, more people are getting vaccines. You know, the economy seems to be just kind of waiting when we're talking about restaurants and, you know, that sort of sector. That's a big thing here in Pittsburgh. So from your perspective, do you sense that? I mean, you already talked about the numbers, but what about a sense that, like, do you feel that in the people you know?
Yes, I do. I think people know I live in both Nashville and D.C. And in both places, the churning, the eagerness, the excitement about just if the restrictions will just lift.
Yeah,
I was talking again, because I live in Nashville. I know some artists and some of them fairly well known, and some of the huge concerts are resuming this fall. Yeah. Well, in Nashville, but folks may not know, if you have a big show, let's say by the Eagles, just to pull a name out of a hat, the number of industries affected by an Eagles tour, the number of contractors, from t-shirt sales to, you know, obviously liquor sales to venues to taxi drivers to Ubers, it just brings a whole segment of the economy forward. Well, people are standing there just ready to launch, so to speak. And the economic force is there. And in fact, the stock exchange today is almost about to break a record. That's how solid it is. So I realize there's economic difficulty out there, but the opportunity to overcome it and actually advance beyond the point of where we started at the beginning of COVID is pretty tremendous.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, you can certainly feel it. There's no doubt about that. So Stephen, we've asked most people who've joined us over this last few months, have you yourself, your wife, have you received the vaccine?
I have not yet because I'm way, way, way too young. But my wife, being many, many, many years older than I am, I'm hoping, I think she's in the other room. If she comes in and smacks me, you'll know.
Right.
That's right. She's had the first and not the second, but I think she has the second in a few weeks. I believe in it. I support it. I was just at a medical university yesterday talking to people about this very thing. Good research, good science, good things happening. So yeah, I encourage it, and I'll have it just as soon as I can. But I'm in addition to what I do that you've described, I'm also clergy. And so in Virginia, clergy now can get the shot, even though I'm not over 65.
Oh, okay.
So I may play that card and get it, but I think I've had COVID. I'm doing fine. I don't want to bump anybody else. So I may hold off a little while. I'm not sure yet. Okay. But anyway, yeah, I'm a big believer in everybody getting it as quickly as possible so we can get past this.
Yeah. Well, Stephen, it's always terrific to talk to you. Maybe next time you come, it'd be interesting to kind of hash out the idea of why people are reluctant about the vaccine. You know, there are a lot of, it's like a multifaceted issue, right? People are coming at it from you know, political perspective or rural versus urban or, you know, religious or whatever. And I don't know, it's a fascinating time. We always like to talk about that, those types of issues with you. So thanks again for your time.
Great to be with you. Thank you so much.
My great pleasure. Stephen Mansfield, as I said, stephenmansfield.tv, author of multiple books, speaker, coach, and pastor as well.
Thanks for listening to Christian Outlook. Our program is coming to you today in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. It's America's most unique graduate leadership programs offered on Pepperdine's breathtaking campus in Malibu, California. Learn more at publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu. If you enjoy our podcast, take a moment and tell a friend to subscribe today.